You know, nothing else is an escape. I've been watching Korean horror movies to escape, and but this was a nice
wow.
Scene. Well, yeah.
See, and my guilty pleasure has been, I've been watching, I just got through the first season of Madam Secretary, so.
Oh, that's a good show.
Yeah.
So it turns out really? Tia Leone is really good, yeah.
So it's Tim Daly.
And it's kind of, it look, you know, it's kind of like.
It looks terrible.
No,
it's not. It's
got,
it's actually,
the same rip from the headlines thing that you liked about Law and Order, and that same Law and Order, and the same like West Wing feel to it.
Yeah, it's kind of nostalgic. And they have some West Wing crossover characters.
Some characters?
Well, actors. Yeah. Because the woman who played Nancy McNally as the security on West Wing was the security director for on this show, too. So, anyway.
Yeah. No, and yes, Tia Leone is supposed to be basically the most perfect version of Hillary Clinton. Although, I don't know, did she try to, was she introduced as, like, losing the presidency to Keith Carradine?
No.
Yeah, okay. So she wasn't exactly Hillary Clinton. Yeah.
Do you remember the first television show she was on?
I remember her being in Deep Impact. I remember being her being Mrs. David Duchovny.
It was a really early Fox show. I want to say it was called like Herman's Head or something.
Yes, Herman's Head.
Okay, she you do lived remember.
In Herman's Head?
No, she was the girlfriend in real life. Sort of a manic pixie dream girl-ish girlfriend.
She's barely older than us.
Yeah. But that's because we're old.
Okay, I have to read this.
Please.
In 1988, Leone was cast as one of the stars of Angels 88, an updated version of the 1970s Charlie's Angels. After production delays, the show never aired. The following year, she was cast as Lisa DiNapoli on the NBC daytime soap opera Santa Barbara.
Ah!
Dun, 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 dun.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies. The brothers Anderson are. This is Eric, he's the oldest one. The producer who makes it fun. Gotta give him the credit, he's good with the edits. He's been the driving force since they begun. Next we got brother Jay, he just the movies that they play. The sip in the middle, Jay is gonna be a little more critical, analytical when he communicates. And lastly we got Drew, the finally family member of this group. He decides if the movie's worth it. Right kind of guy, that's for certain. Three chatty brothers with a family base. Need an excuse to talk away. Dichotomy of personalities. All you really need to do is press play. One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you want to catch an episode. They talk movies so they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open in that case. We got Eric, Drew, and brother Jay. Welcome you to Not in a Creepy Way. Hey.
Welcome, this is Eric.
This is brother Jay.
This is Drew, and we're jumping right into Santa Barbara talk.
We're going right into Santa Barbara talk because we're talking about things we've been watching in our cold open, and Tia Leone is Madam Secretary, a show which Jason has been using to escape the world. I contend is a great show because I watched it at our parents' house with Mom on Mondays when Journey's in school.
And early Fox shows were wild.
But tonight, we're going to talk about the 2017 American historical drama, The Current War, based on the 19th century competition between Thomas Edison and George Westinghouse over which electric power delivery system would be used in the United States. So, Brother Jay.
Yes.
You are going to be our electric current historian.
I know you were resisting saying electric boogaloo.
Beep! We don't use incendiary language on this program.
No, I'm taking it back.
No.
I'm claiming it back. None of that terrible crap.
Yeah, yeah, that's what people say about flying the Confederate flag. Anyway.
Seditionists. Now, I read an audiobook about Nikola Tesla and his life and works and his struggles against Westinghouse and Edison, which that played a, I don't want to say a minor role, but it wasn't a major role in the themes in the book, but they were definitely big parts of his life indirectly. They had some direct impact, but mostly indirectly. So, and he really got screwed.
Yeah, we'll talk about him in a little bit because I have questions about him.
But as we watch the movie, he really got screwed in the movie too because he had almost no story.
Oh yeah, no, he's just an incidental figure, really.
Yeah.
So and it hit net.
Good Lord.
Do you smell toast also?
Almonds? What?
Yeah.
Wait, lift your arms up and smile.
Okay. All right. Anyway.
What the fuck was that?
Someday, that's to test for a stroke. Yeah.
That's a stroke test.
Yeah. It's part of a face, sorry, FAST. It's face, arms, speech, and time.
Yeah.
I'm familiar. Time is dumb, but oh well.
I'm familiar with FAST.
Yeah. Anyway, the current war. None of us had seen it before this week, right?
Correct.
Okay. Yes.
So, Brother Jay.
Yeah.
What did you think of the current war? Just first opinion.
It was really pretty. It was a pretty film. It had some really good, it had what I think was intentional, a very good impact, useful impact of light and dark. So I thought that was really, I really appreciated that and the kind of symbolism of the movie. Overall, I thought it was a decent movie. I wanted more of the story, but all in all, I thought, you know, it actually kept my interest. It wasn't very long. I had expected it to have been longer. And I had wished for about probably an hour more of movie. Because there is an hour more of story there, I'm almost positive. So they just kind of gave short shrift to some of it.
At 107 minutes, I thought it was, well, it's 10 minutes longer than my ideal time. But it was a good time. Just speaking for me. So, Drew, what was your initial thought?
I'm siding with Jason. This movie was good enough that I wanted more, but not quite good enough for what it gave me.
I agree with that. It wasn't finished.
I mean, it was a complete story, but it felt very light, not well fleshed out. And you could really see that in Tesla's contribution to the story, because he was probably the most interesting character, and he got really short shrift in this movie. I mean, the cast was great. Everybody gave great performances, I thought. Yeah, like Jason said, the movie looked great. I thought it was you know, high production values, and Michael Shannon, he continues to be like a not in a creepy way MVP. He is good in just about everything he appears in.
I agree completely, but I also feel that way about Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yeah,
we have yet to see him in anything that he's been not good at. And I don't want to like him because he's got a stupid name. And the person who plays his wife is a Tuppence Middleton, who I think the two of them have the most English names possible. And she, of course, played Mary Todd Edison.
They also glossed over they didn't gloss over the death of his first wife, but they didn't mention his second wife.
Oh, Edison's second
wife? Yeah.
Oh, no. I wouldn't have known he had a second wife unless you told me just now.
I know. That's what I'm saying. They just went with it.
Yeah. No, I assume he just left the kids with a nanny.
I'm almost positive he had a second wife.
Yeah. It was a good thing though that that she lost her job at the Flushing Queens hairstyling salon, and she came over the bridge, and that way he hired her as the nanny.
Ha ha.
Mr. Edison.
Yeah.
That one went right over my head.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mary Stillwell was his first wife, and Mina Miller was his second wife. He married, so Mary Stillwell died in 1884, and he remarried in 1886.
Yeah, you'd think that would have been mentioned somewhere, huh?
That's what I'm saying. I was kind of shocked that there was, I mean, just, I guess it wasn't story enough to be in the story. I don't know.
What they should have done is have him marry Nikola Tesla, and that way it would have given Tesla more screen time. So, the story begins. Now, Drew is looking at something in his own house, but because of his background, it looks like he is staring deeply into the eyes of David Bowie, who played Nikola Tesla in The Prestige.
Great performance by him.
Yes. Yeah, that's another all-star. So, it's 1880, and Thomas Edison has unveiled his electric light bulb and has decided on direct current, DC, which is cheaper and cleaner than gas light, but is limited in range and expensive. George Westinghouse, played by Michael Shannon, a successful businessman and inventor himself, wishes to learn more and invites Edison to dinner. After being snubbed by Edison, Westinghouse sets out to prove alternating current, AC, is the better technology and can work over greater distances and at significantly lower cost.
Well, and see, this is one of the problems associated with how fast the movie goes. It's never really fully explained why Edison was so invested in direct current versus alternating current. It's suggested that he is so far down the path that that's the horse he's chosen. He's too stubborn to think of any other options, especially since he owns all the patents for direct current. But it never explores at all why he chose DC over AC to begin with.
Do we know the answer to that question?
I mean, I think we can infer from later in the movie that it's because a lot of the industrial processes required direct current, and he wanted to feed those off his distribution system as well. And that's what Westinghouse was struggling with. But it never sets up that foundation of why Edison went with direct current in the first place.
Ah, yes. Agreed.
I have a Tesla car joke.
Please.
You know what you call a stolen Tesla?
What?
An Edison.
Ba-dum-bum.
Sorry, I couldn't I like help it.
Again, this doesn't really talk about... This is actually a pretty narrow slice of history, as we talked about before. It's sort of alluded to that Edison had acquired patents maybe not completely above board, or didn't always invent the things out of his brain, and instead had taken the patents or bought the patents from other people.
There was a fair bit of shenanigans back and forth.
Yeah.
But I also think that the implication was that they kind of all worked together with the same kind of people, and so the ideas were kind of cross-pollinated.
And the first to publish, right? Or the first to file with the patent office got the patent?
It was the rush to file and the rush to publish.
Yeah. Publish or perish.
Well, and Westinghouse was really good at buying up patents.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, they didn't really talk about Westinghouse's past either. Like, does he have much? I mean, we have the one scene where we show he's very clever that he has flashbacks to.
Well, he made the air brake.
Oh, yeah. I guess they demonstrate that.
I mean, that's in the beginning of the movie on the train.
So that's the sum total, basically, of his fortune?
I don't really know what all of his origin was. He was an interesting cantankerous man.
Yeah, again, we don't get any of that in this movie.
In the meantime, Brilliant inventor Nikola Tesla arrives in the United States and begins to work with Edison, but is disappointed by Edison's unwillingness to reconsider his ideas and to fulfill what Tesla thought was a financial promise, which Edison passes off as just a joke. Tesla leaves Edison's team, and Edison fiercely guards his patents and sues Westinghouse. So, then we get the setup with the fact that Edison is going to prove that AC is dangerous. By the way, this sets up Thomas Edison as something of a advocate of nonviolence, or he will do no harm. He will not create anything that will kill humans. Like, at least in war.
Well, he didn't want to under any circumstances until he was backed into a corner about the DC-AC conflict. And even then, he tried to hide his hand in the creation of the electric chair, right?
Yeah, and the movie sort of intimates that he was sort of talked into it by the cooler, maybe more cynical, practical heads. Because he was all about, you know, Edison's, you start off this, how he is, he goes to J.P. Morgan and says, I just want your money. I don't care about your opinions. So, and I love the little bit about the kid doing Morse code on the plate when they're at the meeting with the president and J.P. Morgan at the same time.
Yeah, I really wish you guys would watch Succession. Is that actor, Matthew McFadden? He plays one of the greatest TV characters, Tom Wamsgans.
Tom Wamsgans?
He is so good.
And Matthew McFadden played J.P. Morgan in this movie.
Yes. Yeah. And he was fine. He was good in it. He didn't really get to stretch his legs at all in this role, but he played it well enough to get some satisfaction out of his final scene with Edison.
Yeah.
When he fired him.
Yeah, because in this movie, again, Edison is the brilliant inventor who is also like a crazy person who doesn't... He's just going to bulldoze everyone with his force of will, and his brilliant machines will speak for him. And that's why he thinks nothing of blowing off Westinghouse. And Westinghouse comes off as sort of a more cultured sort of businessman who also happens to be an inventor and gets his feelings hurt by this Edison thing. And so it's like,
I don't know that the perception is that he was cultured as much as he was just very deliberate.
The way the movie sets him up, and especially the charisma and emotional depth that Michael Shannon brings to him, he is set up as being completely altruistic in his goals and his drive.
Oh, yeah. No, this is a pure pro-Westinghouse movie for sure.
Yes. I cannot imagine that was entirely true. But I think casting Michael Shannon in this role and having him give this type of performance, which is like so sensitive and really painful at times. Because kind of everything is stacked against him, and he only makes decisions on what he thinks is best for the country and best for the future. It's hard to root against a character like that.
Well, yeah. By the way, you know, we are introduced to Tesla, but yeah, Tesla makes very little appearances and very few appearances in this movie, and for very small periods of time, and... The reason I was going to ask you, Jason, to enlighten us, if you pardon that pun, about Tesla is that, first of all, I don't know much about Tesla. I probably know, like, what I have, like, heard through the grapevine and on, I don't know, like, little 30-minute programs on TV about some of his more, like, outlandish designs. But in this movie, it shows him as kind of a finicky little foreigner who is brilliant, but completely impractical. Like, for instance, when questioned about whether his designs will work, he says, of course they work. I know they work. We haven't built them. It doesn't matter. They work in my mind. Therefore they work.
I think Tesla's problem the impression I got from the book was Tesla's problem was that he had lots of ideas, but he never finished any of them. But he would sell them to people to fund other ideas, but he'd never finish those either. And so he would end up getting 3/4 of the way through a project, consuming all of the money that he was given and having nothing to show for it. And then the people on the other end of the money would be like, well, we don't have anything to work with. Where's our money? And he's like, well, it's all right there. Finish it. And then he would move on. And so it became this kind of the cycle where he would go on to bigger and better things, but he'd never finish it, or he would run out of money and not be able to finish it. And nobody else knew what the hell he was doing, so they couldn't finish it for him. So he was always kind of one step ahead of the repo man.
That does not make him a very sympathetic character all of a sudden. It's like, what a jerk.
And the way he's played in this movie, he's played as being, you know, almost autistic.
Yes.
In the sense that he doesn't understand sarcasm. He doesn't ever consider that anybody could be anything less than exactly what they appear or what they say.
He's super finicky about people touching his stuff. He doesn't mm-hmm. like the slightly slanty floor.
Well, so the slightly slanty floor was his attempt to not pay for the room.
Okay, there you go.
No, nobody, I'm not kidding.
Nobody likes an unlevel floor.
Also, probably lines on the floor are a problem. Anyway, so...
Wow.
No, I know. It's cold. I'm sorry. It's been a long week for me, too. I apologize. All I can do is apologize.
And J.P. Morgan financed Tesla. I mean, J.P. Morgan financed everybody. So
I was going to say.
But he died in his little apartment on the 33rd floor, penniless and broke.
Tesla did?
Mm-hmm.
Now, did he cause the... I want to say Tuskegee experiment, but that's not it. It's the something or other event in Russia with his death ray.
I don't know. You know what I'm talking about? No.
Something happened in the late 1800s in Siberia, and it was an explosion that was maybe caused by a meteorite or maybe caused by Nikola Tesla's death ray that, you know, exploded all those trees. It starts with a T, and it's like the something event.
Oh.
Well, there's also in the late 1800s, he created a teleportation device used by a magician.
There was that, yes. That's a very sad story that was explored in much better detail in another movie.
Tunguska event.
Oh, Tunguska. Yeah, there you go. Okay. Yeah.
It's so. Russian for death ray.
It is, yes.
1908.
Anyway. Yeah, like that big, gigantic Tesla coil that you see the little model of. I think he built one of those, but it was never officially online or something. Again, as Jason, you said, maybe it's one of those things that just never got finished.
Well, he was really good at not finishing things.
Yeah. Or maybe he flipped the switch and it blew Russia in half, and then he decided not to flip it again. Or maybe he never even knew if it worked. You know. Because he was all talking about, and I think, yeah, they talk about the movie too, how he wanted to make electricity to be transmitted wirelessly, right? Yeah. So. Well, you're gonna knock over a couple trees. So, back to the story. So, Edison is going to, now it's just a race to convince cities all over the country to adopt the Edison DC approach. And Edison has another advantage. The DC is a disadvantage because it requires a lot more like a generator every mile or something.
And you don't get as much distance out of it.
Yeah. So it's short distance, but it is, it's instantly transferable to the machinery you need for manufacturing. Again, like the sewing machines and whatnot, factory machines.
Yeah, as I understood it, the direct current couldn't sustain high voltage, and since it was low voltage is really susceptible to resistance. So the longer the line you have, the greater the resistance.
Makes sense.
So it you'd need a really high current to keep the voltage up over a long line. Which is why they had to have power stations every mile or so. With AC, you could crank the voltage way up so that you could transmit it over great distances with pretty low current.
But then changing that high voltage down back, stepping it back down to a lower voltage that a regular machine can handle is an issue.
Yeah. Well, there are two things. There's stepping it down, which I think was fine, but then transforming it to direct current.
Ah, okay. So, yeah. So here's where, Edison's relying on a couple things. His name, because he wants his name on everything, and the fact that he made those gorgeous light bulbs. And Westinghouse has maybe the better technology, but not the Edison name, and he has to use other light bulbs, trying to figure out how to use light bulbs that don't break Edison's patent or whatever. So there's that. And Edison wouldn't be selling his damn light bulbs to Westinghouse anyway, so it's not like he could just buy them off the shelf.
No, but Westinghouse uses a light bulb of somebody who essentially just ripped off Edison's patent.
Oh yeah, these people don't have all clean hands for sure. And then we have the unfortunate incident. Again, we have to inject a little drama. This is all real life, so it's, you know, the drama comes with it. But on one hand, we have Edison's wife who dies.
Yeah.
Which is actually pretty, I thought it was, you know, well done. And then we have Westinghouse, who his friend and, like, what, chief engineer or something, dies in an electrical accident. So, and that's a problem, especially when there's already rumblings that AC power is more dangerous. So hold on just a second. That's not my AC thing. That's my, I got to go to the bathroom thing. So talk amongst yourselves. Tesla coils.
I really did want way more, way more Tesla in this movie.
I wanted more movie, but I definitely wanted more of the Tesla story because he was almost non-existent. He was just kind of anecdotal. And he just seemed like a lackey, which he was not a lackey. He, you know, he was quite in his own right. You know, he's quite the eccentric tinkerer. I don't want to call him an inventor as much as he was a tinker, because he never really created anything successful. But he had, well, I shouldn't say that. He had some good ideas, but he never made any money off of them. Frank Leonard Pope died from 3,000 volts.
That's enough. Have you seen any of the Hulu show The Great?
Mm-mm.
So the same actor, Nicholas Hoult, plays Russian Tsar Peter the second or third, the one who was overthrown by his wife, Catherine the Great. So my wife and I are watching that show right now. We're a few episodes in, but it was really interesting to see the different performances. He's a really good actor, so he did a good job at playing the quirky Tesla, but he's also really terrific in the show The Great, which I recommend. It's very it's very funny for how tense of a show it is.
Pope died at age 54 as a result of accidental electrocution by 3,000 volts in the basement of his home at 518 Main Street in Great Barrington. The house he died is now a bed and breakfast called the Wainwright Inn Bed and Breakfast.
Mm. Yeah, the toast gets stuck in that toaster. You definitely don't use a fork to pull it out of there. Definitely not.
Now they have those toaster bags.
Yeah, I don't trust it.
I don't either.
Yeah. I don't understand how that would even work. Don't even, that's like voodoo shit.
I had a roommate that used to cook her veggie patties in my toaster.
Hey, I can barely even look at a microwave without having flashbacks to childhood trauma. So there's no way I'm like putting like liquidy stuff in a toaster. So now we have deaths on both sides of the I guess competing factors, and both are facing financial ruin. So to generate funds, Edison commercially sells his speaking machine, the phonograph. And to damage the reputation of the AC current, Edison shows how easily it is to electrocute animals. You basically, he has groups of people going around, like under, what is it, animal rights? No, like human rights. Sorry, it's not animal rights for sure. It's the Human Rights League people who are going around and having public displays of electrocuting cats, especially. And they show the scenes, they show scenes of an elephant. They show elephants a couple of different times, but thank God they did not show the actual video of the elephant being electrocuted, because you could see that. And it's, again, I'm not into watching snuff films lately these days. So, yeah, not good.
Topsy the elephant.
That guy who played the human rights activist was the most evil person in the movie.
Oh, it's great.
And I'm including the guy who killed his wife.
Yeah, for sure. Anyway, so again, we have the electrocution of animals. And then he secretly works to help the creators of the electric chair, which is designed to be like the most humane way to kill someone, but also provides a nice example of how AC can kill somebody. Because the idea is direct current is so low voltage that you can touch it all day long and it might hurt, but it won't kill you. But AC, even the smallest child or woman could be leaning up against the wrong light switch and die instantly.
Lamp post.
There we go.
But by the way, you know the Topsy the elephant electrocution happened 10 years after all this, all the hoopla.
I did not know that.
It had nothing to do with Edison. It was just that's folklore.
Oh, I did not know that. Yeah. So it just mean. So it's just bullshit and horrible.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, don't get me wrong. Edison killed lots of animals
to
prove a point, but the elephant electrocution was not one of them.
Yeah, and as it turns out, the electric chair, there's like subterfuge where Edison was sending all of these letters on design ideas and stuff and actually putting like, you know, burn after reading or whatever. And they weren't being burned because they were signed by Thomas Edison. And then Westinghouse ended up paying for those letters and then having them published. So he outed him as even though he... It's funny because the movie portrays Westinghouse as like such a noble man, and he admits to his wife that, yes, he did this underhanded thing, and he's really like
forlorn.
He's like confessing this huge sin. He will go to his grave feeling bad about it. And instantly she kisses him, and presumably they make sweet, sweet love because of her passion for him being a bad, bad boy. Or maybe it's my rich inner life that took over that scene. Anyway, so yeah, the execution,
Are you the one that wrote this plot synopsis for Dead Calm?
Maybe so. Exclamation point. They had, that's not an exclamation point. I'm just happy to see you, Mrs. Westinghouse. So, I was thinking Westinghouse. So Westinghouse probably comes from like the German Westinghaus, meaning a place where you sleep, which is kind of like the bunkhouse, which means that maybe George Westinghouse was related to one Archibald J. Archie Bunker. Or not. Anyway, so...
I think you nailed it.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's 23andMe, Ancestry.com. You got nothing on me. Yeah, so the electrocution of the first prisoner goes poorly. It was gruesome and horrible and wrong. And I mean, it never would have worked. It never would have gone well for Westinghouse. But it turns out it goes poorly for everyone on every side of that argument. And of course, you know, now that we know Edison is helped design the electric chair using Westinghouse's deadly, deadly electrical system.
Dirty, dirty power.
Exactly. Now, after unsuccessfully attempting to strike out on his own, Tesla is approached by Westinghouse in that scene in the hotel to work together and build the practical AC motor. and Edison is increasingly marginalized, and J.P. Morgan merges, and J.P. Morgan merges Edison Electric to General Electric. Which, again, the only thing Edison really demands is that his name be on everything because he wants a legacy. And they're like, nope, we're going to call it, this is just a placeholder name, but for now we're going to call it General Electric, jackass. So, the competing systems come to a head as they both put forward proposals to illuminate the 1893 World's Columbian Exposition in Chicago. By the way, have either of you read The Devil in the White City?
No. Nope.
It's by, I think, Eric Lustbader, maybe?
Oh, man, fuck that guy. He ruined Jason Bourne.
No, maybe it's not that guy. Maybe it's somebody, maybe it's another Eric. I don't know. You have to, Jason will look it up while we're waiting. the Devil in the White City. It's not Les Bader, it's somebody else. But anyway, apparently it's a great book. I have not read it, but it's about both Westinghouse and H.H. Holmes, who made his murder hotel in Chicago for the World's Fair also at the same time.
Eric Larson.
Larson, there you go. He's done a bunch of like historical novels like that.
Oh, I've read other books of his.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
In the Garden of Beasts.
Is that about the Italian
It's about... No, that's about the Berlin Zoo and Hitler.
There's one about the Lusitania, I think you did.
Thunderstruck, perhaps?
Dead Wake.
There you go.
Oh, you're right, yeah.
So, then we have... Edison's his right-hand man, Samuel Insull, who presents the bid on behalf of Edison, and Westinghouse presents his own competing bid, but the bids cannot be more different in the presentation style.
Yeah, fun little thing. I know you guys don't watch these movies, but his secretary is played by Tom Holland.
Yes. Yeah.
Who's Spider-Man.
Yes. Yes.
And Edison is Doctor Strange.
Ah, yeah. I've seen some of those movies. Not the Tom Holland movie, but I saw Doctor Strange.
I like Tom Holland.
Yeah. Yeah, and of course, we also see that, by the way, even though Westinghouse was super successful, won the World's Fair thing. Obviously, AC is what we use to transmit electrical power from place to place. But of course, Edison is like, hey, I got this new invention. It'll be so incredible that people even forget my name is even associated with electricity. And that is motion pictures. So without Thomas Edison, not only would we not have the phonograph, we wouldn't also have motion pictures. And Jason, while you're being the research desk, sorry about that, but can you look up Edison's Frankenstein?
Did he do a movie?
He did. He did one of the first movies. Oh. I think it's like 7 minutes long. And they use some crazy special effects.
13 minutes. Silent movie.
Yeah.
Newly restored.
Is it available on YouTube?
It is.
Cool. Yeah.
Here, I will.
It's 13 minutes long. We'll put a link on.
Music to it, really?
Well, that's because in the old days when they chose silent film, they had a piano player. Or sometimes an orchestra, I suppose, but for most places, a piano player. I don't know. I'm talking on my ass. What do I know about anything? Period pieces, goddammit. Yeah, so fade to black. But, you know, all sorts of electricity stuff.
You yada yada what I thought was the best scene in the entire movie.
Please.
Which is when Westinghouse and Edison finally met face to face.
Yes.
This cannot have happened in real life, but this was such a great scene for both actors. Because Michael Shannon plays Westinghouse in such a way that he is... so charming and has such a high emotional intelligence that when Edison kind of takes a pot shot at him, he gets defensive at first, but then he knows exactly how to diffuse the situation and gets Edison talking about the first time that he got the light bulbs actually work, and it worked for 13 hours. And they both do such a fantastic job. Because Benedict Cumberbatch goes on and does a great job just giving a monologue describing how it felt in that moment. and I believed him. I was enthralled. But so was Michael Shannon. He was so good at just kind of giving good face while he was listening and being really empathetic and in the moment. Yeah, that scene like redeemed the entire movie for me.
What, okay, so what about, you know, Michael Shannon's Westinghouse keeps having these flashbacks to like the Civil War, right? And what did you think about that the reveal of that scene? I was not expecting anything like that.
I knew that was coming from the first moment when he lifted the gun up.
The trickery?
I don't know what that was supposed to add to the movie.
I think that was to give you gravity to the reason why Westinghouse was really deliberate and just very calm and really was just like, I'm just going to do things this way.
And to show how like what a low key genius he was. Like he was Edison's equal in the genius department.
Yeah, he'd already killed a man, so he's like, I'm good.
Well, I was thinking more like just tricking, like using his outsmarting the guy that got the drop on him.
Gotcha.
Yeah, he's going to emotionally disarm somebody until they lower their defenses enough that he can shoot him in the neck, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. You know, he's gonna kill the guy. It's like, yeah.
Yeah,
he's not going to take a bow after.
I did not see that. Maybe I'm not smart enough, but I did not see that metaphor exactly play out in the events of the movie. So I didn't quite get the purpose of those flashbacks.
Oh, I don't know. I thought it kind of proved all along that he was the man that his wife wanted him to be all along. He just did a better job of hiding it. Because Edison didn't hide anything about his personality.
That's true.
And then Tesla didn't hide anything about anything. He just talked about whatever the hell he was thinking. And
nobody understood him anyway.
Exactly, yeah. So, so any more notes?
Nope.
So, Brother Jay?
Yeah.
What was your verdict?
It's really hard. I'm really torn. I think this was probably... A B movie, A minus, B plus. It was well acted, and it was definitely a beautiful movie. Just there wasn't enough there. So I think it was good. I don't think it was great, but I just wanted more of the rest of the story. I don't feel like this was a good. It wasn't thorough enough for my tastes. So I left. The movie at the end being very wanting for more of the story. And since I already know more of the Tesla story, it just felt to me like they just pretty much shit all over Tesla. They really didn't give him much.
Would it have been a better to be a like 6 or 8 hour miniseries?
Yeah, that's exactly what I was just thinking. I want to see the 6 episode miniseries version of this movie.
Yeah. That would have been excellent. I think my dog is running ghosts. Up and down the hallway. Okay. No, ghost. It's just my 90-pound dog.
Been watching a lot of Korean horror movies, I'm just saying.
Yeah, it's super creepy when you're hearing noises you can't explain, but nobody can see your background.
Yeah, well, that again, when you turned and were staring meaningfully into David Bowie's eyes, I was a little creeped out. So, Brother Drew, was it worth it?
This movie is worth it. It's really well made. I wanted more. It left me unsatisfied. But the performances are good and it looks great and it's a super interesting story. I didn't know much about the current wars.
Bastard.
Sorry. Who?
I missed it.
No, I was taking a.
Don't worry, you'll see it later.
No, I won't. No, not necessarily. I was going to ask you about the U.S. And I'm totally interrupting you. I apologize. I was taking a little snapshot of all three of us, and then it turns out I took a snapshot of Jason drinking. And anyway, so I had to take another one. And then I wanted to ask you guys later how you felt about that, because I realized we don't normally like broadcast our faces.
Yeah.
But no, people loved done. It. people loved it.
Falafel so, pig face.
Yeah.
It's worth it.
I think, you know what? And I think that, yeah, again, I thought this was fine, although, yeah, a little light in like content, I guess. But I thought this was a great little escape, a 107-minute escape from what in, you know, early to mid-June 2020 is a world worth escaping for 107 minutes.
Are you saying this is a period piece you liked?
Yeah.
Because you hate period pieces.
Well, as we've discovered before, well, I hate every period piece except for the ones I love.
Yeah, and not to steal Eric's thunder about being a hypocrite, but this movie really did make me feel like a hypocrite because in my mind and in my heart, I wanted something short and I wanted something light. And then as soon as this movie ended, I enjoyed it, but I was unsatisfied. I wanted more. I wanted a longer story and I wanted there to be more weight to it.
Yeah.
Inner contradictions, man. They're tough.
I know. What is it called?
Not have way.
It is called not have way. You know, if we did merch, we'd have not have way shirts for sure. Steve Martin would sue us, but.
Yeah, we get publicity, though.
Oh, there you go. Grumpy old white guy goes after three grumpy middle-aged white guys. News at 11.
You think I'm grumpy?
No. Yeah, grumpy indicates that you have another mood, you know? Like, you're grumpy today, but you're not every day. I think the Drew mood is... It's pretty steady. I think you're a pretty steady, stable guy.
I think that was a compliment.
No, your outward appearance is you're very, you know, look, you're a Westinghouse.
My children don't think so when they ask me where the scissors are.
Well, exactly. You know what? So I went to Costco on Saturday, like the day after we recorded last time.
Maybe did you buy like a 12-pack of scissors?
I was going to buy a 32-pack of scissors.
The Fiskars pack, right?
I was looking for it. They only had like the 3-packs. I think we have to wait till like back to school season to get the Fiskars 30-pack. But I would have left that as a gift from the pod.
There's never going to be a back to school season.
Well, that's a whole nother deal.
Back to school season has been canceled.
Yeah. Well, isn't it? Here's a thought I just had, but I'm sure not an original thought. Wild that the Renaissance Fair was canceled because of a real plague. Yeah.
Anyway. Dear.
So take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here.
Take a listen if you got a second to bear. If you like, subscribe, you can even share. Films on films, discuss on air. It's a brother podcast, we're gonna leave it right here.
One podcast talk show. Hit the app if you wanna catch an episode. They talk movies, so they go off on a tangent flow and maybe ramble. That's the brothers Anderson. So sit back with closed eyes, let them take you away. Unless you're driving, keep them open in that case. We got Eric, Drew, and Brother Jay. Welcome you two, not in a creepy way. Hey.
Not in a creepy way. 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 Okay.